Right, let me go ahead and start a new recording, just so we don't have to deal with this. What? I will edit the intro banter back in. All right, guys, thanks for joining us for the official first episode.
Official first episode. It is Wednesday, February 18th, approximately 6:23 in the afternoon.
Yeah, I like how you dated that.
So there you go. This is the official in case iTunes fucks up.
That's true, yeah. It's another thing, though. We are now on iTunes. How about that?
I like it. It makes me feel more professional about my life. And
doesn't it? Who else can say they have a podcast? It
gives me value.
I'm sure there's only like 2 listens, and those are, it's probably more like 8, 7 from me, 1 from you.
Yeah, 2 from me. 2 for me. 1 download at least. And
nice.
I listened to it once.
Nice.
And it was good. No, it was really good. Good chemistry back and forth.
Yeah, I liked it. This is going to be a lot better just because we're indoors, not in a car.
Yeah. So sound quality right off the bat, it's top notch.
Yeah, definitely. No, our first one, it was in my car, so we had a little AC adapter running, and that made a whirling sound. And then I had to go back and edit that out, or at least I tried, and then it just made it sound really processed.
So this time around, though, it'll be legit. It'll be good.
We're good.
What should we talk about, sir?
Yeah, let's hop right in there. I know I sent you a text over some topics, and you threw out depression as one of the things we could talk about.
Yeah. I feel like it affects a lot of people. Not even just, we think about just the country, but worldwide, it's something humans deal with. And maybe a lot of people don't even know how to deal with it when it can be an easy thing to solve, but it's definitely very difficult. Very, very difficult. People go to doctors for it. I mean, what are your thoughts about depression? Have you ever faced it in your life?
That is true, yeah. You said people go to doctors. There was a post on The Onion how antidepressants are a great way to monetize depression, which is definitely true. That's exactly what it, well, not exactly. That's a very one-dimensional analysis of what it is. But to answer your question, I've never, actually I have. I had sort of a breakdown, not quite, we can call it a breakdown, a non-violent breakdown. I think it was my junior year of high school, and where essentially a friend of mine referred me to the school a counselor, and she just sat me down. She's like, "Yo, what's going on? A friend of yours told me that maybe you'd want to talk to me," and it's the middle of the day on a Tuesday.
I didn't need this.
And at first, I'm really hesitant to open up, but she seems really inviting, so I just break down. The world has no meaning, and there is no God, and this is all pointless. And she's just looking at me she has no idea what to do. She's just there.
I think you're the only person I've talked to personally about the same thought about how the world is pointless almost. Those kind of conversations. I feel like you're the only person I've talked to. I never talked to a counselor or a doctor. I've talked to my dad about those kinds of things, and he just looks at me like I'm crazy. Like I'm not a human or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's a very, that's a definite, an upper level. That's one way to look at it. It's a really, it's a very real conversation to have. It's not everyday banter, and when you try to open up with the wrong person, maybe your dad, you're just not going to get that connection that you would otherwise from, I think, what we have, but, yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much he thinks about those kinds of things, though, death or being sad. He went through a divorce. At first, it was a separation for 7 years, because my mom and my dad, they really cheated on each other a bunch. And then my mom really just disappeared from the picture for a long time. So I don't know if he definitely said that he cried a lot when she left. So I know that he's definitely gone through depression, but I don't think he ever expected that conversation with me. I don't know. I think he thought maybe I'd be stronger than that and not have to deal with it. But I feel like a lot of people do. Just a lot of people closet it or something, and maybe that leads to something later on in life where they just explode. They say there's implosive and explosive people.
Yeah, a lot of people are definitely closeted about their death anxieties. I think that's how fucking Manhattan shooters happen.
That's a thought. It'll keep me up awake at night sometimes before I go to bed. If I think about, oh crap, I'm gonna die someday, I'll be awake for another 30 minutes, just trying to think, how am I going to sleep and how will I know that I will wake up again in the morning?
Oh, no, I definitely get what you're saying. I think my way, maybe a way of dealing with it, and I think a way that a lot of modern society deals with it, is just compartmentalizing it. You know, you put that thought, like, yeah, I'm going to die one day, just up in a cubby in your mind, and you just don't touch it.
And you wait until you reach older ages, like 60, 70, to even start thinking about it.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm trying to think about it now so that it can help me, like, really put the whip to myself to do better and do better things with my time, not be lazy. And just the thought that, you know what, my time here is limited. It's been 3 years. 3.5 years since high school, almost 3 years now, and the time just flew by, so that's just a couple of years, and I feel like I could have accomplished a lot more in 3 years.
Yeah, no, I definitely think we don't talk about it enough. We don't put it in that perspective that our time is a limited resource.
It's not like popular culture.
You know? Hey guys, we're all gonna die one day. Let's talk about that.
Unless someone makes a song and puts it on the radio and it's a catchy, yeah, we're not gonna think about it.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, I've had that thought in my mind, like when you read like philosophers, and you compare that to modern day life. You know, academic philosophy is so vastly has such a different role in society than it did. Like, if you're, you know, like a philosopher at Cornell, like your lifestyle and your influence is completely compartmentalized in comparison to like Socrates or Plato. Like, these are guys that, you know, I wasn't there, but from what I've read, it looks like they had a role, like they had a context, like people look to them, like people ask Socrates, like, hey, you know what, you know, and he wrote the dialogue. Well, he didn't write the dialogues, but Plato wrote the dialogues, and obviously they're going to be a little egocentric, but it's like they had a role in society, and it looks like the people that were really answering those questions are, like you said, songwriters, which I think is really funny.
And do you think that can go towards the a certain thought that there is a certain group of people that controls what's on the radio, and like, okay, I'm not going to go into like Illuminati sort of talk, but the way that it's probably it's just about the money, but I've noticed, you know, there'll be a waves of like, here's a bunch of songs with a bunch of girls in them, and then there'll be a bunch of guy songs that just come on the radio, and then there'll be a whole season of songs about love, and then there'll be a whole season of songs about like, let's rip shit up, and you know,
I've never really,
there'll be like a year, there'll be, and then like 2 years later there'll be a conflicting side, so like,
I'm sure if you sat down and like studied patterns, you would find some really scary shit. I think it's probably just money that's influencing it, honestly.
Money's the number one factor. I mean, Billboard, that kind of stuff.
Money's the number one factor. No, bringing it back to the thing you said about like time being like a resource. Yeah, there's a really cool TED Talk. It's like why 30 is not the new 20. And it talks about really capitalizing on your 20s as a time of change and really making things happen.
Eventually, you think it'll be down to like age 15 to 20.
Fuck, I feel like that's what like
it's going to get to.
Like when you're in like a really high pressure like school system, like I think our school system even had that, you know, where, you know, we had certain students who were, you know, out competing, and, you know, I was sort of a part of that in a way. So, yeah, like, definitely there's a lot of pressure to, like, make your 16, like, your 16, 17 years matter.
So I'm not sure on the suicide statistic, but I think Japan might be up there. I mean, have you ever seen that, I mean, you know the school system in Japan, like, how much pressure goes on to their kids to, at a very young age, to get into really good secondary schools.
Oh, that's
true. And then a really good high school to then get into a really good college. You know, it's like the same way in New York, they do it the same way. But I wonder if, like the way you see teenagers these days, they dress more mature.
You think?
I think so. There's a higher percentage. I mean, there's always a couple people, but until, you know, everybody gets in the same kind of wealth class, they can afford like nice clothing at a young age.
Okay.
And continuously dress nice. Then we'll start to see maturity levels rise at a young age. Once parents aren't like spanking their kids and yelling at them, and they realize there's only one way to raise a child, and it's like with love. And seriously, I've seen so many differently raised kids at like the age of four.
Some people and, are shitty parents.
There's a lot of kids that are crying and yelling for things in the store. Then there's another kid that already knows from their parents, like, no, why are you crying and yelling for that? That's not the way to do it.
That is not how you behave, so, child.
I think once we all evolve past that point, maybe we won't face depression at all.
And really? I actually have the exact opposite reaction. I think the more we evolve, the more prone to depression will be. Just because I think depression is something that is most likely to happen in like higher levels of thinking, like people that mm-hmm. I hate using like evolution because it sounds like such a like social Darwinism.
Right.
But like people that are like concerned with the getting by, like paying their bills and. You know, just getting through the week. I think that occupies their like mental just capacity so much that they don't have time to think about like their place in the universe and how like their existence will mean nothing in the grand scheme of things.
So what do you think will happen to those people or like a lower class? Do you think that we'll go towards a French Revolution type thing where they overtake? That's what my dad seems to think, is that one day, you know, the lower class is going to rise up and just revolt against the upper class again. Or do you think maybe they'll get rid of a upper class and lower class and finally make one just mainstay, just across the board, everybody's kind of even? No, because that doesn't feed into capitalism.
I like the like whole classist undertones we're taking for this podcast.
I mean, that's what my dad seems to think, and he, you know, he hasn't been right on a lot of things.
How did you guys get to this topic, first of all?
I don't know, just the want to be part of the upper class, but okay. Also having seen the lower class.
Oh, yeah.
He sees, like, what the lower class, you know, is, or the working class, and then he says that eventually there's not going to be any middle class, it's only going to be the upper and lower.
Upper and lower.
And then eventually there'll be some kind of revolt again, and then they will be a middle again.
Yeah, I feel like this would be, like, the part where we should bring in, like, an economist to, like, properly answer that.
That would be perfect.
Yeah.
Because, like, what I'm trying to say, though, getting back to the whole evolving out of depression.
Yeah, let's go back to things we know about. I don't know econ.
Is it that...
I gotta see.
That wasn't my theory, is if we can finally create kind of a perfect environment for humans to evolve... which we really haven't yet, besides with capitalism and, you know, revolutions, industrially, technology revolutions. I mean, we really haven't evolved a whole lot. We just have the tools for it, but we still don't have everybody up to that level of, you know, the knowledge that a doctor has.
No, yeah, definitely. I had that, like, a very similar realization last semester, or a couple semesters ago when I took Western Civ, because you're reading, like, all these ancient texts, like Epic of Gilgamesh and, you know, Myths from Mesopotamia, and if you break it down, like, a plot structure, like, Epic of Gilgamesh is just, like, this guy whose bro got grounded, and he wants to go, like, break him out. It's essentially what you can reduce that down to. He's sad because he can't hang out with his friend because his mom called him in. So, like, honestly, like, have we really evolved that far from, like, you know, 200 BC, you know, ancient Mesopotamia?
I don't... Like I said, technology-wise, but, brain-wise, I don't think there's a very big difference in the structure of the brain from a couple of thousand years ago to now.
No, yeah, brain-wise, probably not. What do you think, like social structure-wise?
Social structure, yeah. Not a whole lot of difference right there.
Yeah, exactly.
First civilizations, yeah, I mean, it was the same setup. You got one guy in charge, a lot of people under you, a lot of people trying to revolt, a lot of people not liking what you're doing, and they control everything. I mean, kings, anybody, I mean.
Yeah.
I think countries are basically the same right now. You know, we just, economically...
It's basically the people.
You got some that are in the lead, and those are the ones they were saying are, you know, doing the best.
No, yeah, definitely. I mean, actually, I did read an article, I think it was by Princeton, it was a study that basically makes the case that you can apply the label of oligarchy to the United States. Like, definitely, like, you can't just say it, you know, as like a posh, you know, classist joke. Like, it's an oligarchy is what we live in. So that has a lot of truth behind it.
I think they're, I mean, we're taking baby steps, though. As long as we get the right presidents that are going to take the right actions to make baby steps for a better future. Yeah, like what Obama's trying to do with making a free community college.
Oh, yeah, he was going to vote on that. Did he? Do you know the details for that?
What I didn't
did
see the end result on that. But the fact that I saw when he brought it up in the State of Union address, and I thought that was fantastic. He did bring it up,
yeah.
I thought that was great. He said a lot of great things. He said, you know, women still don't have equal pay.
That's very true.
I said, are you kidding me? Like, I mean, I knew there's a glass ceiling, but come on.
Yeah.
But I mean, once everything's even across the board, once there's no racism, then we can all just kind of focus on the future and the evolution of the United States or the future of Earth.
How long do you think it's going to take to get there? Like, first of all, let's raise this question. Is it even possible? I mean, it's possible, but is it feasible given the context of our, like, culture and what we're doing right now? Given the fact that it's the year 2015 and we have kids, like little kids, half our age, that make like our shoes and our clothes and, you know, our iPhones probably, do you really think we're going to get to a point where everyone has an equal chance to live a fulfilling and
That's a very tough life? Question. It's a very tough question. I like to hope. That's what it comes down to, is hope.
Just got
to
hope, man.
You got to hope for it. You got to pray for it. That's what my dad says. Pray to God, man.
I think a better approach would be to, like, try to make it happen.
Well, that's what it comes down to, is hope. And then once you get enough people hoping the same thing, you know, of course, you got that one person that's going to, like, take charge and, like, all right, let's actually do something about it. And then at that point, you got everybody behind you, though. It has to take, you have to change the mindset of everybody.
Change the mindset. Yeah, I think it comes to that, change the mindset. But back to what you said about raising kids, yeah. Louis C.K. has a lot of funny bits about that, how people think, like, he's a good person because, you know, he gives to charity and, you know, he raises his kids properly. But he's like, no, my parents weren't bad. They were just broke. Like, when I got home and said, Mommy, feed me this, and she slapped me, it wasn't because she was a bad parent. It's because she was tired from working all day.
That's what it comes down to. See, if everybody got the same amount of pay, or I won't say if everybody got the same amount of pay, but if we all were in the same circumstances, like, families didn't have to struggle, that kind of stuff, then we could all focus on the bigger picture. We wouldn't have to worry about just living every day.
Yeah, I definitely think, like, putting food on the table is way too much of a hassle than it should be. It should be easier to, like, just not die.
Yeah, and then, you know, that adds stress. Like, if you got somebody who's having to worry about that, and, you know, they go a couple years worrying about that, first thing on their mind isn't, like, where's the future of the you know, human race going? It's about, where's the future of my family going? Because, yeah, I mean, they could go their whole life, you know, not producing a doctor in the family, you know? Or say their kid wants to work somewhere else for some business and, you know, he doesn't want a career. And where were they? You know, they both work for just some business, you know, like a store or something.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
So, there's a lot of families like that. And the first thing on their mind isn't, where's the evolution of the human race going? Or maybe they're not all that into politics. You know, maybe they don't even watch the State of the Union address.
Ooh, they are bad citizens.
Yeah. I feel like I'm a little advanced just because, you know, I'm young and I can have these ideas. You know, we're both young and, you know, there's a dead air somewhere.
What? No, you're good. Yeah, we I think we're doing pretty well as far as knowing what's up.
And we're concerned about the right things.
Yeah, and I mean, we're not, you know, taking steps to change it. You know, we're not out there, you know, bringing about change, but at least we're aware of it. And at least I try to, you know, whenever I can, like, make things that'll go towards, like sustainability, for example. If we want to get specific, like, I always try to get, like, the washable plates, the ones that you can, like, reuse instead of the plastic ones that, like, I mean, you can recycle them, but that's still, you know, you have to drive it to the recycle bin, someone has to process it, or you can just have a washable one that you can keep using, so.
Exactly, yes.
Little things you can, conscious, like you said, we're aware of shit, so.
Being aware.
Yeah, we're getting there, you know. And at the end of the day, like, we're, like, young, we're in our 20s, so I think that's all you can ask of us. Like, excuse me that I'm not out there trying to solve world hunger, okay?
Well, I feel like I need to be doing a lot more now, just because, okay, I just saw that movie Project Almanac, where they go back in time.
Shit, I don't know that movie.
You might want to watch it. It's pretty cool. It's a MTV film. But basically, there's a, I don't know, he's like 17, 18-year-old kid with his friends in high school, and he's really smart, though. He built, like, some kind of drone or something at the very beginning. And his dad had passed away a long time ago when he was like 7. And so he follows some clues that he saw. He saw a video of his 7th birthday and he sees himself in the mirror, like walking in the background. He's like, wait, that's me. And then he stumbles upon a thing called Project Almanac that his dad had worked on with temporal relocation, which is, you know, time travel.
Oh, yeah.
So they ended up going back in time. But the fact that he was just so smart and that he had that drive to get into MIT and he's one of those kinds of things, I was like, oh, man. You know, I need more drive in my life to start accomplishing these goals.
Yeah. I don't have enough drive, damn it.
That's really what it takes. I mean, that's another thing. I'm going to quote my dad a lot. I know that over time.
Okay.
He says, you know, what makes you great is trying just a little bit harder than the next person.
No, that's true. No, trying.
But, I mean, who is that next person? I like to think, you know, whoever your role model is, try as hard as they did.
Actually, on that topic, I was listening to Tim Ferriss show. It's a podcast, and it's the episode when he's interviewing Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, okay.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger is slowly becoming like one of my favorite people ever.
He's great.
Yeah, like I knew very little about him.
Mr. Universe.
Yeah, Mr. Universe, Mr. Olympia. Like, I just knew him from pop culture. Like, oh, he was a Terminator, and he was the governor.
The governator?
Governator, apparently. And
he's accomplished a lot. Yeah.
He's done a lot. Yeah, I like first got into him after watching Pumping Iron.
Yeah, it's a great documentary. Great
Like, that was really cool, just because it showed me how intense bodybuilding is. Like, when you dedicate yourself to bodybuilding, like, that's kind of your life.
Yeah, it's like your job. It's your all your job. Hobbies.
Yeah, your it's life you basically do. Revolves around bodybuilding. But in the interview, of course, we talk about him starting out and. You know, he's just such a confident guy. Obviously, now it's easy to see why he's confident, because he's accomplished so much. But before he had, you know, the millions and the movie deals, like, how... He was already a confident guy. Like, how did you get that?
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing I took away from that is his... spoke of a vision of himself he had. He said, like, I had, you know, an idea, a vision of who I wanted to be, and everything I did was to work towards that vision. And I'm like, yeah, yes. That's what I fucking need.
A lot of motivation. No, he's a great person. I mean, that's why he went on to win so many titles in bodybuilding. And then to take that money and to decide he wanted to do something else. I know somebody probably approached him because he was really famous in the L.A. scene because he would work out at Gold's Gym on Muscle Beach. And so I'm sure he was really popular in the L.A. scene. And, you know, a lot of people in California must have really liked him. That's why he became the governor. And he, you know, went on to Hollywood to make those movies. But, I mean, that was all him, of course.
Yeah. No, and then, like, during the interview, you realize how... Even, like, once he was a bodybuilder, it was a struggle then. You really got to listen to the podcast. It's a really cool episode. He talks about how in the 80s, like, or was it 70s? In that 70s, time area?
70s.
Yeah. Like, agents told him that it would be hard to get deals, movie deals, because at the time, like, this was when, you know, The Graduate came out.
Right.
And basically the sex symbol had gone away from, you know, big muscular guy to, like, the... lean, small guy. Like, Woody Allen was pretty big then at the moment. And he's like, well, you're a big guy. You can't, you know, this is not what the people want. They don't want you anymore. And he's like, fuck you, man. and he was like the Terminator. And
yeah, until action movies became a really big thing.
Exactly.
When, like the basis of CGI and, you know, the mixture of that and animation into movies allowed for the Terminator.
Yeah.
And they saw him as, well, okay, yeah, we want this guy right here. He's scary.
He was cool because people were telling him, like, oh, come on, you don't belong in this niche. He's like, I'll just make my own niche.
Yeah, I thought the way that he retained his titles, too, was amazing because he had a lot of competition from, like, Franco Colombo and just other bodybuilders. They were all gunning for him, you know. It was like the way people gunned for Roger.
Yeah. Let's bring it back to tennis.
Yeah,
every episode is just a segue into tennis.
It's like the way that everybody wants Obama's job.
I don't think. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Everyone thinks that they can do it better.
Everyone thinks that they can do it better. That's definitely true. I don't know if everyone wants it, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he strived, man. He's a great person, too. I mean, I love that documentary. I like the jokes that he tells in that.
Arnold, yeah, he's a funny guy.
He says that, working out, when you get the thing, when you get the pump, and, yeah, you know, people that bodybuild or work out a lot will know what that means, the pump. He says, once you get that pump, it feels like you're coming. It's better than sex.
It's better than sex.
And it's, honestly, it's true, too. Well, to a certain degree. You know, it feels great. It feels like, you know, you just smoked a cigarette, or you just had a beer, or, like, you just won a competition. And, like, the glory comes from within your body.
That's very true. It's a very self-fit. I'll tell you something else it's like. It's like fucking acing your anatomy exam.
Yeah.
Boom.
It's all you. It's like you put in the work and then it showed your success. And bodybuilding is a really nice way to do that. Like, for people that might face depression or that kind of thing, you might want to go work out, seriously, and just feel better about your body. You know, eat better and work out. Or just eat better. If you eat better, you can feel better in a mindset just like, well, I'm doing better than people who are eating at McDonald's or something like that.
Oh, dude, no, heck yeah. I get, like, such a fucking euphoria high, like, after I'll eat some kale. Like,
yeah.
It tastes like shit, but fucking, I just ate some kale. I love better than you. Kale. You like the taste of kale?
I love kale.
How does that even... Dang.
It's this thing, I don't know. Once I stopped eating, like, junk food all the time, and once I stopped eating, you know, meal after meal, I started focusing on superfoods like kale, dragon fruit, acai... You know, flax, that kind of stuff. And just, I don't know. I've never had a problem. I used to hate the taste of spinach. I love it now.
I love baby spinach.
I don't know what it is. Kevin Smith talks about that, though, because he's making steps to lose all that stomach weight that he's got.
It's Kevin Smith.
You know, from Clerks.
Oh, from Clerks?
Yeah, yeah. Kevin Smith.
The director?
Smodcast.
Okay.
One of the biggest podcasts.
Okay.
Yes. Director Jay and Silent Bob, Clerks, Dogma. A lot of great movies. He talks about how just eating healthier foods now, like, the taste is different to him, and he's like, whoa, this was actually good for my penis. About how it's better for his sex organs. And he's like, wow, I didn't know this was, like, food for my libido.
Yeah, I don't think McDonald's is very good for your libido.
No, I mean, I can definitely feel it in my body, like, after I eat a burger versus after you eat a salad, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, well, of course, your body just feels good. Or after I eat some tuna.
Oh, yeah.
Tuna just feels like it's just perfect. It's like it's meant for my body.
It's a two-way road, too, because you, like, physiologically, you know, something's going on there because you're getting, like, nutrient-dense food.
Right.
And then psychologically, like, you just feel like a badass.
Exactly, yes.
I'm better than all you fuckers.
So in two ways, you're getting some benefit just from eating better.
Yeah.
Now, a third one, go work out, and then you're going to see all these, you know, just improvements with your body. You know, you're going to be able to run faster, your muscles are bigger, you look just sexier. Why not?
Yeah.
So,
good way.
That's amazing. And he was doing it at such a young age, you know.
Are we still talking about Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger was doing it at such a young age. I think he was like 12.
Oh, really?
Younger than that. His dad had him going at it young, and then once he, you know, started developing an actual, like, teen body, and then his male body, just took off from there, you know?
Oh.
He had it installed at him at such a young age.
Yeah, you mentioned his dad, and, yeah, he talks about how a support system, a support group is really important. That's why he really is passionate about the after-school programs, because a lot of kids, they don't have, you know, that role model, that environment where you have someone pushing you to, like, become better and, you know, achieve your potential, which is, yeah, I could definitely identify with that. When you don't have that, it puts a lot of pressure on the individual to achieve.
And then it's like, can I come up with it? Or, you know, and then the individual themselves, they're not thinking, like, can I come up with it? They're just kind of thinking about what's the future, you know, what will the future hold versus what can I do today?
No, very true. Yeah, I think I can identify with that because, like, my parents, they weren't super hands-on with raising me just because they kind of saw, like, you got this, Axel. Yeah, you're pretty smart. We'll just let you figure it out. And I just look at them like, I don't got this. What am I doing?
I feel the same way with my dad. He used to say the same things. You know, he knew that I was very intelligent, just that I had it down, that I could do it myself. So he wasn't very hands-on. But I feel like it would have taken a lot of other factors in my life to really make me, I wouldn't say a perfect teen, but just someone who's really ready for college and then knows the game plan and then comes out of college ready, you know, to be a doctor. I feel like I should have done sports when I was young.
Oh, yeah.
I told my dad that. I said I really needed to not just be a closeted-in kid, you know, all the time in my room on the computer. I feel like you should have had more initiative. You should have been taking me places, you know, and not just been sitting watching TV all the time.
Yeah, dad.
You should have been taking me to maybe the museum, to the park, made me play sports on a team. You know, I would have been like, all right, dad, since you're making me do this, awesome. You know, I wouldn't have had a say in it.
Yeah.
And you know, it can't really go for all people because, you know, there are certain kids, I guess, that would rebel. But I don't think everyone's going to rebel if you just raise a child to not do that.
No, yeah, it's definitely a fine line you have to walk between, like, just burdening your child with all these activities. Exactly. But I definitely think...
But they're all character-building ones. Like, if you play a team on a, or a sport on a team, like, you learn so many lessons from that at a young age. Say you play at, like, age 10. Now you're gonna learn teamwork. You're going to learn, like, hustle. You're going to learn how to really get what you want to do. Say you play soccer. There's a lot of skill involved in that, plus the team benefit. And I feel like that's great for children at a young age.
No, seriously. Yeah.
Character building at such a young age. And something I didn't have.
Yeah, moral of the story is, well, fuck our parents for not making us play sports, damn it. Damn it, Dad.
I feel like someone should have definitely put me in tennis at the age of 7.
Dude, seriously.
That would have been so nice to have played tennis for 8 years before I actually started.
Yeah, no. In retrospect, yeah. A lot of things could have gone differently. But, you know, they all build up to who we are today. Mm-hmm. I think if we had that, if, you know, we had that character building right off the bat, obviously our lives would have gone a lot differently. You can't definitely say it would have been for the better.
Correct.
But then maybe we would have taken it for granted in our later years.
Maybe we would have.
Yeah. I feel like because I had to basically just like reinvent myself, like once I reached like adulthood, because I realized there was a lot of things missing, I'm like really in a good position for like what's to come. Like by that I mean, I'm sure we've gone over this, like, a lot of times.
Yeah, we've gone over it. How we talk about, like, we've experienced our midlife crisis at such a young age.
Exactly.
So it's like, what's stopping us from succeeding for the rest of our life and not having to do that again?
No, seriously, yeah. I think of Doll's House. Like, when I read it, I'm like, this speaks so much to me. Because, you know, Nora's having her midlife crisis, like, in her 30s when she has, like, kids and in a marriage. And it's so hard to just leave that. Or at least for her, it wasn't. She just fucking leaves her kids behind. But no, like we've had our midlife crisis shit like already, so we're good, man.
I feel like at points I might still be in it, just because I'm not back in school 100% yet. But I feel like when that happens and I see that I can make it, you know, a couple years without messing up, and then I make it all the way to med school, that then I will know that 100% I won't have those issues again. I've moved past it. I didn't stay obese all my life. You know, I worked out, I played sports, dated women, found, you know, the path to life that I wanted, and at that point, I just kind of went for it and got it.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot more meaningful when you get it now, because it's like, you meant for that to happen.
Exactly, yes. Man. So let's talk about how, like, six girls asked for my number. Okay, two of them I work with, sorry, three I work with. And then three I met through different like work associates. And then there's actually one more from another place, but I don't really count that one yet. She hasn't asked for my number, but she's given me the eyes plenty of times that she's like interested in me. And now I'm thinking like, oh, I like should I have to decide from like one of these like six, seven girls as to who I'm gonna take out on a date and maybe actually date?
Oh, okay.
Or can I just manage all of them at the same time?
I don't know. I think it'd be kind of fun.
I think it'd be
really fun.
It'd be very challenging, I think.
It'd be a
it's
fun
already
experience.
Challenging trying to juggle like two or three. But I had like I work it into my schedule. I just as long as I schedule these things right, it kind of works. I sound like an asshole saying these things.
Nah, it's cool. I mean, you probably do. No, definitely. Yeah.
It's only because I've never experienced this in my life. You know, I was always overweight, and, like, girls just weren't into me. I mean, I could tell there were some girls who were into me, and, like, I don't know. I was definitely shallow, though, at a young age. I was very shallow. I think I'm still shallow, too.
I think we're all very shallow people.
Yeah.
I think it takes a very special kind of person to not be shallow.
It definitely does.
I think we should be okay with being shallow.
I think so. Yeah, because, I mean, like, what it comes down to is personal preference, like, I guess. The kind of people that you like. Maybe the right girl with the right personality, maybe, you know. She wouldn't look like what you want her to look like, and then at that point, you gotta get out of your comfort zone, and maybe you marry that woman. Who knows?
You never know.
I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Right now, I'm trying to set something up with Jose, because this is kind of a cool story. So, there's a guy, Cashmere Cat. The artist is coming.
Is that a guy?
It's a guy.
I don't know why I always thought it was a girl.
It's a guy.
Yeah, you see, they produced Kanye's new track.
Yeah,
Wolves. That was so
like
cool.
Blowing up.
Did you like that?
I like that.
Yeah.
That
did cool. You see like the art show that he released it at?
I didn't see it.
It was different.
Okay.
It was a different art show, and it was cool though. They played like the first 10 seconds on loop or something like that, while he showed off line after line of the models, and at the end, it like started the whole song. And then he, like, creeps through the crowd in, like, a black hoodie. And creeps through. He's like, this is what I give you. And it was really interesting. It was really cool. I don't know the guy who does the vocals on it, though. Like, Vic Mensua, or... I don't know what his name is, but... Yeah, that track is really cool.
No, yeah, it's very cool.
So, Cashmere Cat.
Cashmere Cat, yeah. No, so he's coming, and Jose can't go because it's at the 21 over venue.
Mm-hmm.
So he like messaged Cashmere Cat. He's like, "Oh my goodness, you're like my favorite musician, and you're coming to town, but it's a 21 and over show. Can you get me in, please?" And he's like, "There's nothing I can do. Sorry, but I'm playing another show. He's opening for Ariana Grande."
Oh really?
Yeah. And he's like, "I can put you on the guest list for that, and you can watch me open up. It's only a 30-minute set." And Jose's like, "OMG, yes!" And it's like so cool that Cashmere Cat actually like responded.
That's amazing.
And yeah, we're gonna get to go because we got put on the guest list by himself.
Wait, so where's Ariana gonna be? At the Sprint Center?
Independence Center.
Independence Center, okay.
I think that's the place.
Out in Independence, I suppose.
Probably. I don't know. It's a big, like, I don't really go to like big concerts. But we can also get to see Ariana Grande.
Dude, I'm jealous of you guys now. I love Ariana.
Oh really?
Yeah, man.
Oh, I feel bad because we'll probably leave.
So it's basically like free tickets.
Yeah,
you guys got put on the guest list.
Yeah, by him, by Cashmere Cat.
You guys, not cool. I was thinking about going to the Wiz Khalifa concert when he comes here.
Oh, is he coming?
He's gonna be with your like Fall Out Boy.
Oh yeah, I saw the poster for that.
And they're gonna be at the Cricket Wireless Amphitheater.
Cricket Wireless, yeah, that's a little big for my taste.
Yeah, no. It's definitely one of those, you know, big mosh pit type scenes where like everybody's standing in the crowd. But and the tickets are like pretty expensive, but I think it's for all of the acts that are there.
Oh, okay.
So it's not just for like just Wiz. It was like $80 though.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah, but I think they're gonna be here in like April. I don't know. So it'll be like really nice, April or May. But it'd be one of those things where I just get like really stoned and go, you know, and then like roll some doobies and then smoke in the crowd and just Especially with his last album. I mean, Cashmere Cat had produced like some of the stuff on there too.
Yeah, that's what I read, that he was doing some of that. That's cool though.
He had a lot of great beats. Like, I equate Wiz's last album, Black Hollywood, to like Taylor Swift's last album.
Oh.
Like how big that was.
Which one is... Is it Red?
No,
is
1989.
Oh,
with
okay.
All these like Blank Space and Shake It Off, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Because she went for the same thing. Like this last go around, a lot of artists went for like almost all pop records. Just whatever is just going to sell the most. And that's what Wiz did. And just, you know, a lot of people didn't pick up on it because of, like, the things that he talks about. So it didn't get put into, like, popular culture.
Okay.
But the fact, like, production style and, like, the way that he would do hooks and stuff. Yeah, it was basically the exact same as, like, Taylor Swift's album.
Oh, okay.
Except hers just reaches, you know, to, like, millions of people in America.
That's very true.
Which is Wiz.
She is on the radio.
Which only applies to, like... Whoever likes
people
him.
Who
whoever
likes Wiz.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think it's cool how if even if you don't like Taylor Swift, you're still gonna get Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm.
If you have ears and just spend time outside.
Let's see. There's some people that really don't like her. I don't know why.
Really?
Yeah, I do though. I really like Taylor Swift.
I like Taylor Friends just because I'm Taylor Swift. Just because I'm friends with people that like her. But no, I wouldn't like go to a concert for her.
I wouldn't go to a concert unless it was like really inexpensive. If it was like $20, $30 to go see Taylor Swift right now, and it wasn't that far of a drive, I would go.
So basically under implausible, never going to happen circumstances.
It goes back into like, if it works around my schedule.
You would not take the day off for Taylor Swift, is what you're saying.
No.
Okay, that's all we need to know.
I would take the day off if there was like a Dragon Ball Z movie playing at the Sprint Center. Yeah, I would do that. If it was like a one-day thing and I had to take off work, I would do that.
Like a good one? Like that actually?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Did you see that they're making a new game? Comes out like in a week.
I didn't, no.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah. Is it for the PS4? Is it for the new gen?
It's going to be for the old gen and new gen.
Okay. I can maybe play it then, yeah. I haven't played a Dragon Ball Z game in a long time, though.
I've been waiting just... I speculate on the newest ones that come out. And I'm like, that doesn't look very good. Because the old ones were so good on the PlayStation 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, they had everything down, graphics-wise, fight-wise.
Oh, yeah. PS2, the Budokai series was just like...
Budokai 3, that was perfection right
Budokai
there.
Budokai 3, like, they should have never made a game after Budokai. They should have just kept re-releasing Budokai 3 with new box art and just see how long it takes people to realize.
I would love that. Oh my goodness.
Just like say new and improved graphics.
What they did on PS3 was they made, was it Burst Limit and Raging Blast?
Yeah.
Burst Limit, people got so pissed because it only went through the Cell Saga.
What?
It only went through the Cell Saga, but it was like, it was new, it looked so good. Fight mechanics were good, but it just went through the Cell Saga, and I'm like, wow, yeah, like why would they do that?
It's a good saga though, but yeah, the Buu Saga I think is definitely my favorite, just because you get Gogeta and everything in there.
Yes,
that's the good.
But I mean, until they make perfect games, that's why I don't buy games, because I just have too many things that are wrong with them. Like I'm still waiting for a full world, open world Pokemon game.
Oh yeah,
on like the Wii U. I feel like that could be the console that could create it. That puts you first person as a trainer.
It doesn't first have to be person bad. Pokemon, that'd be cool.
Well, I'm not sorry, not just first person, but just you are the trainer,
okay.
And you get to go out into an open world and catch Pokemon.
Okay.
And it could, you know, it could take the first three worlds, like the Kanto, the Johto, and the Hoenn.
Hoenn.
Just give me the first two.
The first two, I'll be happy.
And then start pairing them like that. Give me two worlds at a time. Make them open world, you know, redo the entire world. That'd be amazing.
Did you get into that, like, Pokemon RPG thing? I don't remember.
Poke MMO?
Yeah.
I've played with it before, but I haven't gotten into it to where I'm sitting around on it.
Okay.
I might someday, because I know Rain does it now.
Rain is into it, yeah. You
might have and to. I do want someone else to play Pokemon with.
Yeah, we should get into that this weekend if I'm not busy. Dang it.
Yeah.
I hate being busy.
Do you have it?
Oh, I can download it. I'll download it.
I'll download it like tonight then.
Speaking of, we should get Rain on the podcast at some point.
Yeah, no, definitely. We need more people that are definitely more insightful.
We need, people just to get the word out that we have a podcast. I was thinking of possible guests. I like how we're just planning our podcast in our podcast. Let's not do that.
Yeah, you guys can get our itinerary.
Yeah, so our itinerary is I want to try to get Jovan Porsamdi.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he's done, you know, he went to Peru and he did his ayahuasca journey. And I also want to get Neil Patel, just because he dropped out of college and he moved to Palo Alto to become a programmer. He's doing that. He's doing the whole, I dropped out of college to do this shit, which I think is so cool.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's like, I like it a lot.
I wish I can drop out of college, but can't do that dental school, damn it.
I myself am going to try to integrate myself into different places in Kansas City, just around this area, and try to find the people I think are just most interesting to me.
Okay.
And then maybe try to bring them on it, you know, from time to time.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, bring in, you know, we won't just have one guest at a time, maybe. We can have your guest and then my guest, and then they just go against each other.
Go against each other?
We'll have fight night. Where they just banter against each other. Who knows?
I thought we were fighting, actually, David.
That'd
pull
be good.
Out the sock and bop 'ems.
Those will be the video podcast editions.
Oh, yeah. We'll need to get a visual setup for that.
Like the head of the new tennis club.
Oh, yeah.
Bring him on at some point. Or, faculty from here. Or maybe they won't want to speak on the same subject matter we speak on.
I'll ask my calculus teacher, hey, you want to come on our podcast? What's it about? Drugs and tennis?
And history, and history.
And history. There's a lot of history. And classes, Thundertow. Oh.
She said, well, sure, why not?
Well, sure,
why not? I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
This isn't going on the internet, is it?
No.
This is going in the newspaper.
A full printed out word by word play. It's hilarious.
Well, yeah, other people I know too. Anybody.
Get it out there.
Yeah. People we meet.
People we meet. Just, you know, I don't. My expectations for this podcast is that it's, just a creative outlet for us both, so we can refine our thoughts.
I think so too.
Yes. Get ourselves out there, and we can listen to it and see exactly what we're saying and critique it in a way. And it's just, it's a good project. It doesn't have to turn into something.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a very successful podcast.
Exactly. I mean, if it does, that'd be cool. But as of now, I'm satisfied with it just being,
a creative place.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like time that we actually, we plan for, we sit down, and we're thinking for that amount of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm also, just learning, editing and just skills and mm-hmm. uploading a podcast. Like, I could manage a podcast now maybe not yet. I've done one episode, and it worked. But, it's doing shit.
I can speak professionally now, so that's nice.
Oh, exactly. It builds your eloquence. It forces mm-hmm. you to, really think about what you're going to say. So, I think I want to bring it back to depression, even though we didn't, fully focus on it. I mean, basically, what's the deepest depression has ever taken you? Like, what's the deepest you've ever gone through the depression rabbit hole?
All the way to the point where I thought about killing myself.
Okay.
So it was almost suicide. But that was triggered by just the most extreme of my emotions. That was triggered by, losing a girl I thought I was madly in love with, to the point, where this is the girl for me, this is the girl I want to marry and have, a life with. But there's so many things that are wrong with my life right now. Like, I'm not on the right track, so how could I think I could manage that? So when I lost her and then I started hearing other things about that, I started losing hope for life.
For life.
And I was like, oh God, I can't live without her. I feel like I'm gonna be depressed for the rest of my life. But that was wrong though, That was, as soon as you meet another girl, it could change your life right there. It was like, why am I even stressing about women at this point? I need to stress about myself. Unless I'm broke on the street, hungry, and I have no place to live, I shouldn't be depressed. I should be, striving to just succeed at this point. I should be making money and then going to school and then having a career. Whatever I'm interested in.
Yeah. Okay, I have a similar, mindset at the moment. I think of myself, do you know what a bulk is? Like a winter bulk? Like in bodybuilding?
I'm not familiar with the term.
Okay, it's basically in the winter, because it's snowy outside and everything, you basically are just, you're cultivating mass, basically. It's always you don't worry too much about being lean and cut, you focus on getting big. So I feel like right now, I'm trying to do sort of a winter bulk, physically, I'm gonna go to the gym after this, but I'm also in a psychological winter bulk where I'm trying to just better who I am. I'm trying to just take it all in, read more, find creative outlooks, do well in school, so that in the future, I don't know when, months from now, years from now, I can just use all that just social character and social wealth that I have and just...
It'll be the springtime of your life.
The springtime of your life.
When spring comes in that mental state, you're ready. You're ready to become the butterfly.
Yeah, I'm ready to play tennis, man. Fuck this weather.
I too am cultivating mass right now, but it's just a lot of eating. So. No, seriously, just from time to time, I'm trying to eat a lot more protein and have that in my diet.
That's good.
With having tuna, there's 30 grams right there, and then I get Greek yogurt with granola put into it.
It's another 17 right there.
It's actually another 30.
Damn.
20 grams from the yogurt, and then 10 grams from the granola.
What fucking steroid yogurt are you eating, man? That's a lot of protein.
Hy-Vee Greek.
Crack yogurt.
Yogurt with crack. Sprinkles of cocaine.
Yeah. No. the depression thing, I think... I think that's just something else that draws us together. Like, we have such a close bond because we've both experienced that. I was actually, like... super depressed. Not depressed. I think I have, like, just stretches of sadness. And mm-hmm. I had one really bad, like, last week. And I actually kind of wanted to talk about it in the last podcast, but we postponed it. This is it, the podcast. And, basically, I got to a level where I never thought I'd get. And that was that I got home and I just felt so dull and so empty by the fact that the depression was just numbing me so much that I couldn't feel anything. So I went to my bathroom. I had some scissors, and I didn't have any, like, blades, scissors, but I had, like, a razor. And I basically, like, took the scissors, and I, like, cut it so I could get, like, the blades out, like, from mm-hmm. a razor that used to, you know, shave.
Right.
And I was, like, trying to cut myself, basically, like, trying to just, you know, make myself bleed. So I can just feel that emotion. And
feel the pain.
I'm doing it. Like, I'm cutting it. I have it. I, like, have it up to my, like, wrist. And then I look at myself in the mirror, and it just hits me. Like, this is going to accomplish nothing. Like, I'm not going to get anything other than, like, my arm is going to, you know, be fucked up for a bit. Like, there's nothing good that can come out of this.
That's exactly right. I mean, I've been in that position, too, where I've had the razor blade to my wrist.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, like, I got a lot of razor blades. Yeah, not just from, like, a razor, but from, like, box cutters, that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
I got a lot of those, and...
So you didn't have to go through the whole makeshift?
It was like a swiv, pull out a razor blade.
Could be.
And then at that point, I was like... This isn't the way.
This is, yeah, you don't get
this
anything.
This isn't the way I should do this. I thought about jumping off a bridge. There's a couple bridges I've stood over. Just having that thought.
Mm.
And then it comes down to what my dad says, too. Is, like, when I would cry as a kid, be like, hey, man, the only person you're hurting is yourself. You know, you're not hurting anybody else.
True. All yourself. Yeah. Well, I mean, you're hurting the people that love you.
Oh, yeah, sorry. That's taken in context.
Yeah, context.
All you hurt is yourself. And, you know, if that's the way you choose to leave Earth, so be it, you know?
No, this is a conversation that I've had, like, with myself a lot. And mm-hmm. maybe we can... I want to do more research. There's an Open Yale course taught by Shelley Kagan, is it? He's a philosopher. And it's from free on Yale, and it's about death. It's just like, that's just the name of the course. It's about death, you know. I haven't gone through it myself, but he has like a 3-part lecture on suicide. So I'm really interested to see like what an academic philosopher has to say about suicide.
Yeah, you might want to send me that link. I would read that for sure.
Yeah, I'll look into that. In retrospect, though, I thought it was really funny that as I'm like, about to cut myself and like do the most emo thing ever, I have like a bottle of like rubbing alcohol, and I'm like disinfecting the blade. I'm like, I want to hurt myself, but I don't want to get an infection.
I don't want gangrene. I don't want tetanus. If I die, I don't want gangrene.
So yeah, depressed Axel is very concerned with being sterile.
Yeah, I thought about how much it would affect my family in the long run, though. Like losing
suicide.
Suicide.
Oh, yeah. Like, at times, that's really the only thing that has kept me going.
Sometimes I thought about doing it just to, like, get a reaction from all the people I used to know. Just anybody I went to high school with or one of those things. But then, you know, it would come down like, oh, he died.
Yeah, you can't witness the reaction. No, I definitely think there's an egocentric aspect to suicide. I think it comes down to you think that your problems are so unfixable that the only option is suicide. And that's...
I might kill myself if I make it to, like, age 90 and I've succeeded in life.
If you've succeeded in life?
And I've succeeded in life, I might kill myself.
You know, I have the exact opposite reaction. Like, if I get to 40 and, like, I am not expressing myself creatively, basically if I'm living in the suburbs and, like, have a wife and a loving family, I'm killing myself at the age of 40.
What if I ever become handicapped?
Oh, really?
Yeah, to where I don't have movement, like, in my legs. I'll give that a couple years. I might give it, like, a year, and then we'll see where it goes from there. Fuck it. But if it gets to the point where I don't want to live anymore, and I really decide to take that away, yeah, I'll do it. Just because I want to die, like, on my terms.
On my terms.
You know?
My life.
If I'm in the hospital on life support, and I'm not fully conscious all the time, like, I'm in and out, like that, I might kill myself.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's probably not going to happen before I'm 60, though.
Before you're 60. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Unless I get hit by a truck. Like, unless somebody kills me, or I die of, like, some other stuff, yeah, I might have killed myself for a long time.
Okay. That's good to know, man.
Yeah.
Good to know. I'll have a tennis partner and drug partner at least 60.
At least my whole prime. You'll have me during whole prime.
All right. I've got a tennis partner for the next, let's see, 48 years.
I might not kill myself. What if I stay a bachelor, you know, if I just don't get married and then I become pretty wealthy and then I just start dating young women, like, for the rest of my life? Why not? Why not, you know?
Why not?
This is very misogynist.
Yeah, let's get off of that.
Why not?
Topic. Why not?
What have we got to say, sir? What do you think Kim Jong-un's gonna do?
I don't know.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. No. Yeah. On that, we can get bombed any day. Except we really need to focus on the bigger picture, because, like, at any point, someone can nuke us. Any country, you know? We need to start focusing on the bigger picture.
What is the bigger picture?
Fucking evolution of the, you know, human race.
The human race.
We all need to take shrooms and LSD.
Okay.
And just advance our perspectives.
I like this.
And then just all come together as brother and sister and fucking just, you know, do something. I feel like if we were all harmonized to the same just happy frequency, that something amazing would happen on this planet.
Yeah. I like the thought experience of what would happen if, like, everyone in the world took LSD or mushrooms.
Yeah.
Let's make that happen.
Yeah, I was thinking last night, though, about, like, shrooms, though, and, like, how we need to plan another shroom journey.
You want another shroom journey?
Yes.
Yeah, let's plan it out in the middle of the library.
In the middle of the college while everyone can hear us.
Yeah. No, that's definitely something that I want to... Yeah, I definitely want another
nice,
one.
Once we'll get a really nice weekend or something like that and go up to Smithville or something again.
Yeah.
Because that was a great place for that.
That was a great place, yeah. No, that was definitely one of the more visually beautiful.
Or like Lake Perry. It was Lake Perry where we walked the beach.
We walked a lot. We walked a lot of beaches. I don't know if you've noticed, but I've, like, slowly been, like, guiding us to, like, every single state park in Kansas.
I feel like that was already the plan.
Oh, okay.
I've been telling people that was the plan. I've been telling people I've already seen all the state parks in Kansas.
Okay, we've seen it.
I'm like, yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah. I've taken drugs at every single state park.
So I can't wait to go to Colorado so I can start going to their parks.
Yeah, let's start infiltrating. Let's start doing drugs in their parks. Let's just expand. Let's do drugs in every single park. That's our...
I want to go to the desert really badly.
Want
to
take LSD?
Like Arizona, that, or like
Hunter Thompson
anything,
style,
like ayahuasca. Yeah, seriously, like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas type style. Yeah, but I'm talking about just like out there with like coyotes and wolves and.
Oh, that'd be scary. That's right. That's like a whole other element to the psychedelic experience.
Like if you like when I take road trips throughout the Southwest America, yeah. I want to camp out there so badly. There's all these, like, huge, like, plateaus. I don't know what those are called, though. What are those? Not delta.
We can call them plateaus.
Raised land that just has a big flat top. But anyways.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But they look amazing on the distance. And it's like, I've seen so many, like, old Western films and with cowboys. And so you got to be careful with, like, lizards, snakes, and, you know, that kind of stuff. And the heat and the extreme cold at night.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, if you could prepare for all that stuff and then maybe you got, like, a tracker with you. Maybe. You know, like, a really good friend who's, like, who can kind of bullshit their way to being a tracker, you know?
He's not a tracker, but he's pretty... He owns a GPS, so.
He is slower than me, so the snakes will get to him.
Wait, he's the tracker or is he the bait?
Both.
Okay.
If we can get a find a friend who's both, yeah, that'd be tight.
Boom, kill two birds with one stone.
You're the tracker, but you might die.
No. I still want to do our Arctic adventure. Where, like,
yeah.
We take.
I'm slowly hating the cold right now, though.
I hate the cold, too.
Just the wind chill is what it is.
Yeah.
It's killing me on the inside.
It like, really is. I want the cold, but without the wind chill. Like, if it's cold, but it's not windy, I can do that.
Perfect.
I can do that.
It's like snow that doesn't stick to the ground.
Exactly. That's the best kind. Yes. So, yeah, I think next episode. I've had this, this is going to be sort of a preview, but I'm not really sure, and that's a bad way to put it. So when you look at the 70s, when you look at drug culture in the 60s and 70s, there's a definite movement. Obviously, it's historical, so you can analyze it with the perspective of a modern-day lens, but there's a definite, you know, group of people, there's a definite stereotype that applied to, you know, the people that took LSD in the 60s and 70s. But that same stereotype doesn't exist, or if it does exist, it's not a very accurate one in modern day life. Like, if you try to think of, like, who takes LSD in modern day life, all the people that come to mind are, like, Steve Jobs and Gary Mullis, the guy that invented PCR.
Right.
Visionaries, you know, people that innovate. But, you know, those are big icons, like, every day. Like, who is that? Who does the label, you know, people that take LSD, not really a label, but who does that apply to?
You can't know.
You can't know. Well, first of all, because it's illegal, but that's like a thing. Like, I want that to be, I want to be able to talk about it, you know, without the stigma, which of course is going to take a long time because people
have It'll take a really long time. You still can't really talk about pot without being associated with potheads.
That's true. Stigma.
I think Seth Rogen is, like, you know, just in this new wave of just people that are being seen in the limelight that they openly, you know, smoke marijuana.
And,
like,
you know,
Snoop Dogg, he's one person that, just because he's been successful for over 20 years now, you know, Doggy Style came out in 93, and he's been an artist ever since then.
Since then.
And he smokes very heavily. Wiz Khalifa is another person. Smokes more than Snoop Dogg.
Really?
Yeah. He's,
do they have, like, smoke-off championships? Like, 2 Chainz and Wiz Khalifa just get together?
I one day want, like, a smoke Olympics.
Smoke Olympics?
Yeah. It could be, like, a very underground thing. Like Beer Fest. But no, I mean, these are people that have proven, like, they smoke pot regularly. And they're very successful. So, I feel like a stigma shouldn't be applied.
Right.
But it's part of popular culture.
It's part of that. Pop culture.
People are like, no, don't do drugs, don't drink.
In a way, I kind of want to, like, through my success, through my hopefully successful, you know, career, I want to embody that, embody, like, a, I don't even think functioning, empowered, you know, LSD head.
Yeah, like functioning that would be.
Functioning is kind of a negative amount. Empowered, like, when people that.
Exactly. And successful.
Psychedelics to empower their lifestyles.
That's what I want too, because I want to achieve, you know, the status of having, you know, the title of doctor, and then having a past of doing whatever I wanted, be it, you know, smoke marijuana, be it take LSD, take shrooms, and just not be any different. Yeah. Because, I mean, people, like, they take Molly or they take pills or they drink coffee.
Yeah, that's like a sister to the psychedelics, Molly.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, I want to make that, like, the topic for next week. So think about that. Think about how you want that to affect your identity in a social aspect. And something else, think about whether you think you're going to outgrow psychedelics. Do you think you'll ever reach a point where, like, I'll ask you, like, hey, Jose, you want to take acid this weekend? He's like, nah, I think I'd rather, you know, watch a movie or go to the bar.
Depends. Like, sometimes, like, I'd say I really like to smoke pot, but I think it's all timing.
Okay.
Maybe end it on that note. Like, as long as you, you know, if you got time for it.
Time for it?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. So, yeah, think about that for next week. That's kind of what I want the top to be next week. We should take turns, Sammy. You chose depression, right? That was you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I chose that.
Cool. So I'm choosing it for next week. It's psychedelics and the role that they play in your life and will play. But yeah. Wanna close this off, Jose?
Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Working Title Podcast.
Working Title. Damn it.
The Working Title.
We need a name. It'll come.
Modern Human Anonymous. Modern Humans Anonymous. No.
Too many syllables.
Too many words.
Yeah, it'll come to us.
It needs to be like Apple.
By like episode 9, we might have it figured out.
Yeah, we'll give it the first 10. We'll give you the Bill of Rights, and then we'll name the country.
Fucking awesome. All right, guys. Take care.
Later.